your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. We're going to discuss during this first hour tonight rulership. And we're going to break it down into some real simple terms. We're going to use the acronym FIEFF and then DOME at the end to illustrate a system of rule that has gradually evolved from very rudimentary, tribal types of systems of organizing people to what we have today. And today we have a very, very sophisticated system. We have the School of Economics that is out there just, striving to teach us about the velocity of money, the supply of money, and the flow of everything here and there. But it takes more than just going to school to understand this system that we have evolved into. It's a very specialized system of labor. We have very specialized jobs, and these jobs are broken down into very specialized and defined ways. Originally during the industrial society, an industrial industry. And today I think that has evolved from an industrial type of oriented society and economic system into much more of a industrial and service mix. We have at the top of this pyramid, we have FIEFF. The first F stands for financial. So when we're talking about a world system or dominating in this rulership system, then we have to start where the real top of the hierarchy is, or the capstone, you could say, of this pyramidal power grid that has been created. So at the top would be financial. The next one is FI, intellectual. There we're talking to be speaking about the school system and educating of our students through the colleges and university systems. The E that follows stands for energy. There's been a monopoly of energy, and these oil people have really been dominating. The next letter is F, standing for force. So the people that rule, the elitists, have to maintain a monopoly of force in the form of the most advanced weapon systems that they could ever dream up or engineer or imagine. And then the last F is food. We're seeing a monopoly of grain companies moving their operations and offices to Switzerland. And then we're seeing all this GMO type of genetic modification organisms of the food itself. So we're seeing an organizing force based on money that is slowly evolving us into a world system, a world government, a world financial system. You could call it globalism, I guess. And the English, the British, early on at the advent and beginning of the Industrial Revolution, had to evolve a system by which they could export their goods into markets. And so the markets that they were exporting their goods into had to be open to those goods. And so that's basically the policies that they're pursuing today. The British and these exporters and manufacturers of goods, no matter where they're manufactured at, are seeking markets that they can import their goods into without any tariffs, see. And the countries in the past have always put up tariffs to protect their own domestic production and industrialization. So that's what we're talking about now, is that we're talking about a global system, and the trade itself is monopolized. And then what we're seeing then is a prohibition against any kind of a tariff system that would prohibit the importation of the really insider's goods into those markets. Okay. We have this at the beginning. Let's go back and start over with this thing called financial. Okay. So the monopoly of money creation is centered around the central banks, predominantly in the Western world. China and the East has come on even stronger than before. But in the past, we've seen the majority of our financial money monopoly and money creation has been Europe and America, Japan. And that's why they created the trilateral system or the trilateral commission. But anyway, going way back, one of the earlier central banks or state banks was the Bank of Amsterdam. And that was founded in 1609, okay? Just about less than nine decades later, the Bank of England would be established in 1694. So we're seeing a pattern of the wealthy establishing the central banks and then in turn owning that central bank. So most of these central banks are still privately owned and owned by the very wealthy. Our own Federal Reserve System was established in 1913, and it is owned by the member banks and other very wealthy stockholders that originally founded the Federal Reserve System. So the Federal Reserve is unique in the instance here in this country where they can start creating, entries on a set of books, and they're doing it electronically now. And that is the function that they have a monopoly on of money creation. So basically, this ability to create from out of nowhere, so to speak, has given them the ultimate power to create money from out of thin air and thus dominate those respective economic systems that they dominate within those different countries. See, the bankers then control, if they control the money, then all commerce and all economic activity then is controlled through that mechanism. That's why we've had to put this in. Looking at this, we have to look at this from a pyramidal type of structure, and right at the top would be the financial money creators and monopoly of money creation. Right below that would be the I, standing for intellectual. And what has evolved over centuries, if not just recently, more recently, you'd have to delineate it over decades, has been a system of conditioning minds into a certain way of thinking and conceptualizing about reality. Whether you're teaching the school the students about political, economic, sociological, anthropological, scientific, techniques, or science itself, there's been a systematic evolution, especially in the 20th century and on into this 21st century now, of the education system, which is varying formally regimented and so forth into a system of teaching, Francis Schaeffer, a theologian from this country that eventually ended up living in Switzerland. I think he was a Presbyterian. He coined the term secular humanism or secular humanist. And he seemed to indicate in his writings and his lectures and so forth that the education system, especially in America, has started producing and spitting out like widgets, you could say. That's the way that I describe it. Students that have the philosophy, the general philosophy here. Now, this is not all the students. I mean, we have a mix in this country of some religious institutions, and then we have some, predominantly state institutions. The largest ones would be state institutions. And so, but overall, we're generalizing tonight with this first hour. So we're not going to go into detail like we could if we had more time. But what has raised this ugly head in the school system is that we've had this outcome-based education. We're teaching to the test. We have these core curriculum. But if you go out and the proof is, they say, in the pudding, if you go up and you order a hamburger at a fast food place and you give the vendor there, the clerk, a little bit of even change or something, they can't figure things out of their heads anymore. They have to look at that cash register as to what they're supposed to give you back. They can't count. I mean, it seems like the 3 R's, reading, writing, arithmetic, have been thrown out the window. You know what I mean? And instead, in its place, is some kind of just use the calculator, or if you need something, don't reason it out or try to use logic or anything like that. Just go to the web, and in there's going to be an answer, a quick answer. You can just pull up your smartphone anywhere you're at and click in there to Wikipedia or whatever. And I'm not saying that there's not some good information in there also. There is. But it's systematically being conditioned and organized, I could say. The information is being organized in such a way as to not reveal the real power system. This is what is going on. And whether you're talking about global warming or the money creation system or the real way the politicos work in behind, you know, you could say these front men that they have in Congress or in office, even the presidents of these countries and the high ministers are more like front men when you compare them to the real big money people that are really pulling the strings. The big money people, you're not going to hear their names mentioned. Of course, in this country, we've had the Rockefeller family dominate a lot. In Europe, they've had the Rothschild family dominate a lot. And then there are other countries that have had, you know, big families, the very wealthy, and that have dominated in respective countries. But those are just a couple of the families over the centuries that have done very well and have made exorbitant fortunes into the trillions, if not the tens and quadrillions of money. Who knows what some of these people might be worth today? The intellectual, the I in intellectual part of this acronym is the proof is in the pudding. On the lower levels, they can't even count. You get up into the university levels, they're just spitting out secular humanists. So what do we have there? But just a bunch of systematic, I wrote a little saying one time. I said, the world is a jungle full of parrots, see? And all they do is just parrot what they're being taught or being told. An example of this would be Joe McCarthy. See, he, if you ask a student today about McCarthyism, he'll tell you, oh, well, it was a witch hunt and all this other stuff. The Venona transcripts, which were based upon the Venona program the NSA ran back in 19, beginning to decipher and crack the KGB codes in 19, 47 proved without a doubt that Joe McCarthy was right. He could have made a few mistakes here and there, but his overall premise about there being a large number of communists and Trotskyites in our government was spot on, see. But they go to school, they learn McCarthyism. The knowledge about these Venona transcripts has been out since 1995. But I very seldom hear any students that can grasp what the Venona transcripts and that Venona program was about and covering all of these communists here. We've had in our school system a teachings of Marxism and socialism. Because the people at the top, the money people that we just described earlier that own the central banks and control the capital and the monopolize the mechanism of money creation, they want to level down the lower classes and produce some kind of just a subsistence paid worker, say worker B, that will be controlled by programs and entitlements, and those programs will be designed by the upper level, and then they'll just sort of dribble down some of the earnings that the interest generates down to the lower levels. But they have conceptualized that they have concluded properly that when this country was created, the United States of America, and they went there and the founding fathers and they started declaring the Declaration of Independence, this was something just new, this concept. And it took, instead of bowing to a king, it reversed that and said all men are kings and to be treated equally one with each other, one to another. So it turned this kingship thing, which was drawing upon this great divine, this great divine God bestowed on me this kingship so I could lead my people and govern my people with a great benevolence of goodness and so forth and kindness. Yeah. And how many people have all these kings killed over the ages? Millions. So what you have is you have a delusion that has been set up. It's very, very clever. It's very ingenious. But people are dying to have a leader to believe in. This coming presidential race is like that. The people that gravitate to Hillary, oh, she's going to be, and she represents women and a woman and the first woman in the White House. And these are great selling, you could say, gimmicks to attract people. Then on the other side, we have a multi-billionaire that's very audacious in his statements. So, and so that mammon that he represents, that big money, that attracts people also. And then Hillary's got money too, so it attracts people on the left and the right. But we all want we yearn, you could say, the average person yearns to see someone and that they believe in that can start treating the country right and so forth. So what we have instead in our school system is a teachings subjectivism, a teachings that my truth is equivalent to your truth, so one student's truth is equivalent to another student's truth, and so forth. And so it has set up this idea that we create our own reality, see, and that's the basis for the New Age movement or cosmic, what they determine or describe as cosmic humanism, see. So, when I say deluded, the upper level people are practicing witchcraft, a sorcery, you could say, of mind manipulation and mind control through propagandizing, conditioning through the school system, a certain mindset, see. And the mindset has come down on the subjective side versus the objective side. We think of someone being very objective as being trying to separate the emotions from out of their discernment of reality and truth. But we have today, we have a subjectively molded student who has these feelings-based systems intact, but that's an emotional thing. So that has given rise to this political correctness and these microaggressions and these declarations that have to be made at the beginning of school, the school classes sometimes, in the college classes. It has gotten so crazy and on the emotional side that we're all subjective now. We're emotionally based. We're feelings based, but we're no longer objective to see the truth as it is. I believe that there is a reality outside of ourselves that is what it is. And I believe we have eyes and ears and noses and so forth. And it's up to us to start discerning that. The problem with this is that we, from birth, and our parents unknowingly and unwittingly are inducing into us a worldly-based system. See? Now, they're not really aware that they or themselves have been subjected to a worldly-based worldview, you could say. And when I say worldly-based, I mean not of the divine, but of the world itself. And this doesn't mean that they're bad people or anything. It's just that the people get caught up in a system of thinking within a field system, which is the electromagnetic system that surrounds us. And there's air there also. And in this field system, we become mesmerized, and ideas are induced into us from different sources, our parents, our schools, our religions, and so forth, that we become, you could say, mesmerized and programmed and conditioned into a certain way of thinking that's hard to see that we've been conditioned into. In other words, the delusion that I believe that comes about hides the fact that we are deluded. Now, when I'm talking about delusion here, I'm talking about when I delude someone, I trick them in a way to think a certain way about the reality or something else, or politics or whatever. So the world masters, you could say, the elites, the sorcerers, the world sorcerers and witches and so forth, are practicing mind control and mind control techniques on us all the time. So they mesmerize us, they condition us through school systems and through television, the media. Always, it's the worst, it's the most powerful part of their sorcery work, you could say. But in doing that, then they continue to control us and then milk us for our labors and our monies. Now, they also, in the past, these big money people have supported, an example would be the Fabian Society in England. So the very wealthy out there are actually supporting the world communist system to bring it about. And like I said earlier, it's to level everybody down, to make everybody equal, and to put everybody on a subsistence type of wage or something, and then to control people through benefits and entitlement programs. So that's basically where we're headed, with the real money people at the top, you could say, practicing this mind sorcery on us. The students that I meet every day, they are really quick on the draw and quick on the trigger to find fault. If you don't really, you know, agree with them on their, you know, environment type of programming, or their political type of programming, or their, you know what I mean, secular type of programming, they're either agnostics or atheists, or they're secular humanists, or they're libertarians, or whatever it may be, then they're not happy, see? And they're not tolerant. That's where this political correctness has taken on a very, very ominous character of a tyranny coming from the left. But when you look at the world's history, the tyrannies from the left, which were socialist communist systems, have killed more people than anything else, almost. Those rulers, and Hitler came from the left. He came from a socialist labor movement, by the way, in Germany. And that was on the left versus the capitalist system on the right. The communist system was totally a worker state, which was hijacked and turned into a state capitalist system. Unwittingly, unknowingly, the people were just dupes and slaves for this system that of Kremlin leaders that control the capital of the country through a state capital system basis. See, so it's tricky. See, to be able to perceive, see what's exactly going on, you have to go back and start deprogramming yourself. You have to quit being emotional about it. The religious ideas sometimes can be the biggest barriers for us to jump over, they're barriers that are very difficult to overcome sometimes. The religious aspects of, especially the end times thinking and things like this, you have a Council for National Policy, that comes to mind when I'm thinking in these terms of religious movements. And, it's an end times movement out of Dallas. I think, Timothy LaHaye was a founder of, the idea of Dominionism. And this Council for National Policy, I think, came out of that. But, there are people that are on the right that are members, and they're very religious and they're Christians. But they've been tied into this end times thinking. Now, the elites that run the world out there know about the end times thinking, and so they can play that group, see, using the Holy Land, you could say, as a prop, see what I mean? And then they can take those people and they can lead those people into a political system that those people may not have wanted to enter into without that end times thinking that they're believing in. There are a lot of good people out here thinking a lot of things, see. And they're thinking the return of Jesus and the end times thinking and this 1,000 years of peace and prosperity and so forth. So it's not something that is a negative necessarily, but it can easily be corralled, by some manipulators, to see, how they can use that. Okay, that in other words, a system of thinking is an ism. And any ism, whether it's agnosticism, you know, atheism or whatever, can be used to mesmerize and to control people through. So what you have to try to do is you have to try to awaken yourself to that problem of being trapped in these isms and then being manipulated by these isms. It's akin to cult thinking, see, or hive thinking. These cults out here have attracted people over the years to join them, to join in with them, see. They do what they call love bombing sometimes, where they'll get someone that's interested in some of their basic ideas of their group, see. And then they'll just, what they do, love bombing. Oh, you're so brilliant. And you're just, God, you're catching on to this so quickly. And boy, you would be a good member with us. You would really help us, see. So that is sort of what they call love bombing. And they all do it. But these cults, see, when men come together, two or more, then they form some kind of association and some kind of a group. There's a tendency to develop out of that some kind of an idea of what that group is about. Like, is it, well, we're going to be a libertarian group, we're going to be a democratic group or a republican group or whatever. And there's a set then of ideas that within which that group is operating within their worldview, see. So it's very cultic. Everything is cultic out there, see. So you just have to be careful about falling into the cults. The most dangerous cults are cults that you cannot walk out of and they'll physically restrain you, see. I mean, we've read about some of those lately. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have cults that you can walk in and out of very freely. Most churches you can walk in and out of, see. And, but those are sort of the two extreme examples, see. But if you look at organized groups, and I've started looking at them, looking at them in a cultic way, you could say. Okay. So any group that I'm looking at today, I look at them, and not necessarily I'm not judging them. I'm just looking at them as an organized system of thinking, and it's cultic in essence, basically. Getting on to the next acronym letter here would be E, and that stands for energy, okay? Let me reiterate, just to go back just a second. F-I-E-F-F, and it stands for financial, intellectual, energy, force, and food. Okay, we're at the E now, which stands for energy, okay? Early on in the 20th century, there was a trend, okay? Weed was becoming popular, okay? And so there was a real turn, okay, to take, you could say, the marijuana plant and to convert it. It had so many uses, see? And to take that and to use it to make rope and other things like this. And so as a result, the forest industry, okay, the perceived that if anybody could grow this plant, so to speak, hemp, you know, which is what we're talking about here, industrial hemp. See, if anybody could grow this cannabis, this hemp plant, which is a little different than what they spoke, then the wood industry wouldn't have a lock on many of the things that it would be producing, because hemp can make a myriad number of things. It's coming back now, thank goodness. So there was a tendency to outlaw it, see, and that's what happened. And so the wood industry, the forestry industry, took off, but it required a lot more capital and to fell trees and to process those trees and so forth. And that's why they could keep out the little man, see. The little man could grow hemp, but the little man could not own a forest, see. The other thing that I saw that was interesting was alcohol, see. Back, they were actually running some of the first vehicles on alcohol, so if anybody could create alcohol, which was easily done, then anybody could create the fuel for the motor vehicle explosion that would occur soon after that. So that was outlawed, and then oil and gas industry began to raise its ugly head in growth, see. And then that took from refining took a tremendous amount of capital and technical knowledge and engineering knowledge to refine crude oil into this thing called oil and fuel for the car, and whether it's diesel fuel or gasoline fuel or other products, oil and so forth, for lubrication, da-da-da-da-da. So the oil industry then started coming in and monopolizing and then killing off anyone that was a threat to their industry. And then the hemp thing was outlawed, and the forest industry continued on. The monopoly of energy then it overlays a lot of things. The early Tesla technology, and we all know now, it's so widely written now all over the web and so forth, was Nikola Tesla, a real genius. He invented generators, and up at Niagara Falls he put in those generating plant and designed it and so forth. But anyway, he had ideas and means and methods to pull energy out of out of space. And I believe that those are the things, the breakthroughs now that are beginning to become very prevalent out there. And I think that, of course, if we can get energy, if we can get free energy, then we won't need the electric companies with you. But there's a struggle going on still on many of levels of on this energy struggle. But the energy is out there, see. And it's what they call free or zero point energy, or free energy would be just a very name for it. Recently there was a symposium down in the Bastrop, Texas area that a Dutch group held, And I was privy to sitting there and listening to their lecture, and I did some videotaping of them. And they went into real detail on the free energy aspect. And it's there. It does work. There are devices out there that can generate some of this free energy now. It's beginning to be an industry, and it's working, from now on. It's going to have an effect. But it's minuscule. It's minuscule compared to the power generated by oil and gas and natural gas and coal industry. Still, I mean, it's minuscule compared to that. You know, these alternative fuels, they don't have the real power built into the system that we need still. But the monopoly is still out there, see. And so we're going to be using this oil and gas stuff for several decades, and then slowly we'll hopefully win our way into something that's called free energy. And that would bring us more freedom than about anything that we're talking about. But in the meantime, we're at a crossroads here. We have a rivalry. We have a world group, an elite world group that's trying to continue their power base, see. And so they're trying to put down and do away with all these new discoveries that are finally coming out. So this is the struggle and the conflicts that are ongoing at this time. We have, the next F stands for force, okay? And what I begin to see about this force aspect is that, the Germans were, during World War II and previous to that, were developing a nuclear capability. Well, we, during World War II, had the Manhattan Project, and Albert Einstein was part of that, and other very, very brilliant physicists. Niels Bohr, we finally smuggled him out of Copenhagen and got him into the program in America. Thank goodness. You could say the father of the H-bomb, but he really made some major contributions. The Niels Bohr and those people did and were successful at creating a device that had more power. They cracked the atom than any nuclear device or weapon system since. And so those two devices, one dropped over Hiroshima and another one over Nagasaki, virtually proved to the Japanese that we had a much superior weapon system. And so that ended the war, so to speak. It did save hundreds of thousands of American GIs having to go into Japan if we had to invade Japan by sea. So, Truman made the call. Harry Truman was president at that time. FDR had passed away, and he inherited the White House, the presidential office. And so he did make that call. So we interviewed recently Judy Wood. And we were talking about what took down the 9/11 towers today. And I have looked at all this. Charlotte Littlefield and I have done, we were in New York in 2010 doing a 9/11 Truth conference. And then I went up to Toronto in 2011 and Vancouver in 2012. And I covered those truth conferences too. But in looking at all the speakers, and then of course I've read extensively on the A&E group out in San Francisco that had discovered the thermite connection in the dust. But so Judy Wood, we had her on for 2 hours about a year ago, and we were talking about what kind of techniques were used to take down those towers. She concluded with her studies and her book that something just really advanced had to be used to do that. And she theorized that that it had to be something that could take and transmute solid objects, okay, into dust. The clouds of dust that surrounded that site that were put up into the air, it's just, my gosh, it's mind-boggling what occurred there. She produced a book, and in that book, she describes, you could say, by photograph, you could say, okay, an unbelievable insight, okay, as to Where Did the Towers Go is the name of her book, okay? In fact, she sent one copy to me and one copy to Charlotte, and it's about 500-page book. It's a fantastic book, but she's been attacked, see, because she's owned to something here. But anyway, she believes that we have the capability to transmute, okay, solid objects into dust. And so we were talking during this interview, and Fukushima came up as a subject. And I asked her, I said, Judy, do you believe that we have the capability to transmute radioactivity into an inert element or whatever? She said, yes, I think that she, and I agreed with her. It had occurred to me that because of the 9/11, that I believe that we have the technology that's so far advanced that we can do things that are like that, see. And so, and I still think the Fukushima, I was talking to a Japanese, American Japanese, last night, Friday night, and she was a musician. Her background was American Japanese. And she says that when she talked to people about Fukushima, that her Japanese friends say, oh, you're exaggerating. And most of her American Japanese friends side with the Japanese government. And she and I both agree that the Japanese government's been covering up the Fukushima. I mean, there's three meltdowns that are spewing forth all kinds of radioactive material, continuing now today. And I told her, I said, I felt so concerned in 2014, along with Farrell Montgomery and other people, Randall Mock was another, and Charlotte Littlefield helped out too, that we put together two Fukushima conferences, okay? But those conferences we just couldn't attract anybody there hardly. We did some advertising, the word got out, we were on the web and all that, but people were so blindsided by the Japanese government and our government. Both governments have been colluding together to de-emphasize the danger of the Fukushima and its spewing forth. Now, there's a fellow, Dana Dunford, up in British Columbia, and he did a survey, and we've had him on the air, and we had him at our second conference on a Skype hookup from British Columbia. And he did a survey, thousands of miles up the coast of British Columbia, around Victoria Island, and so forth, all up and down in there. And he started surveying these lagoons and found out on low tide that there was very little sea life there. And it had changed appreciably from previous years. And he attributed that to the radiation that's been put out by the Fukushima into the North Pacific. I think Woods Hole has information now about this. The west coast of California has problems with this radiation. The sea life, the larger mammals, I think, are suffering, being decimated and so forth along there. And the birds along the British Columbia, because it's had an effect on insects and so forth, and it's just, when you take out the lowest level in the oceans, okay, of the microorganisms that are food, okay, for the lower fish life and so forth, when you start taking out stuff like that, you're going to disrupt you disrupt the food chain, you're disrupting all the levels of life, sea life there, up to the more complicated mammals. And so that's what's been going on, and that's what has actually happened out there. But we've got to get back to these issues. This little Japanese lady I was talking to, she said the people that she talks to think that she's a conspiracy nut or something. I said, you just hang in there and you stick with the truth. And she said all her friends just believe what the governments are saying, and they think that I'm exaggerating and things like this. I said, you're not exaggerating. It's a great tragic event, and some are calling it an end, a kill event. But so that remains to be seen. But the one thing that Helen Caldicott, we've had her on the air before, and she made a point of, and she did a fine symposium up in New York 2 years after the event. And then 3 years after the event, I did two conferences that year in 2014. It occurred March 11, 2011, by the way, was the event. The tsunami that swept over and the earthquake that hit Japan and the subsequent tsunami that devastated many of the coastal cities there on the east coast of Japan. So today we're over 5 years on this event, and there are three meltdowns that are continuing to spew out all kinds of radiation and so forth. But so these governments, they know about fiefdom. They organized. The school system is teaching whatever, you know, but their school teacher are not teaching the Fukushima. The students at the university should have held these conferences that I was trying. My second conference, I was trying to get a sponsor from a student group at the University of Texas here in Austin, and I couldn't get anyone to help me to help sponsor this. They just turned a deaf eye, a ear to it, and a blind eye to it. So I had to take the second one off into the University Baptist Church across the street from the campus, and still we just had a minimal turnout. It was disappointing. People are not awake. They're in this deluded state that I was talking about earlier. But we're not going to give up on this. We care about the people in Japan. And there was a whole religious order over there, and I'm not going to say who they are, that we were trying to reach out to. And they said we were crazy. And now they did a disservice to their whole, they had like 12 churches or more over there. And they did a disservice to all their 12 churches over there by not working with us and trying to get the word out and protecting their congregations. That's how insidious this thing is sometimes, is that the propaganda put out by the so-called credible sources like the government and these scientists and things like that, they're all bought and paid for, see? So that you're not going to get the truth from these people at all. Okay, the last part of this fiefdom is F. Is the last F stands for food. We've covered financial, intellectual, energy, force, and food. Now this thing, this food thing, is a GMO. Are you kidding me? There's all kinds of unintended consequences we don't even know about. When we start engineering our food system, something that is naturally grown has a history behind it of having not been detrimental to our health, so to speak, but has been nutritious and, you know, to our health and positive to our health. When they go in and started this GMO stuff, see, and it's based on money, too, and so forth. But there is a big element of a eugenics program built into this stuff, see. And when you're talking about eugenics, you're talking about starting here in America and as a big movement in the 30s. And then it went over to Germany, and then they started incorporating it into their system of race, you could say, you know, cleansing or whatever that Hitler was practicing. So the food angle, there is a company here called Youngevity, and what Dr. Wallach discovered, and he comes in through the back door being a veterinarian, okay, and he was treating animals and so forth, but in his studies, a very brilliant man discovered that the soils out there have been depleted of minerals and trace elements that our bodies in the past were securing through the food, good food. So he created a multi-million dollar company that's providing through his longevity products, and there's other people that can, you can't, you don't have to just get them from longevity, but there's other people out there that are doing similar things. But basically, they're bringing back and providing us some of these metals and trace elements that our bodies have always needed. The GMO crowd out there, they're just pumping out food, and it's cost, and it's a bottom line of cheap food or manufacturing, process versus providing something that's very, very nutritious. Also, there have been attacks in the past on vitamins and nutritions that were sold without prescription. And they're going to, this trade thing has control of that in it. The Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement and the Atlantic one, they have in their agreements, and we don't have a full text. The text has just come out, and I'm going to put it up on my site. I think it came out of New Zealand or Australia, but it was just recently uncovered. So, and I'm beginning to read it in there. They would not allow even our Congress, congressional members, to read that without and taking notes or take their smartphones in there when they were reading that. I mean, what? It's a corporate takeover, and it's going to get worse. We've got to stop, and that's where Trump, he's against that. Okay, yeah, Trump has some problems. But on the other side, we have Hillary that used to be for it. Now, all of a sudden, she's against it. But that's for political purposes for this election. But those people that are standing up against the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement and the Atlantic Agreement are on the side of truth. The other side had been bought and paid for by the corporate interest that want to create these trade agreements. And then those trade agreements will be like an umbrella over and above, you could say, constitutional law, say organic law. And that's what where we're headed with that corporate structure being used as an umbrella. And then there'll be, the trade groups will have committees and appointed this and appointed that. But you'll never be able to elect the people that will, in the end, make decisions on business and our products that we're going to get. Eventually, we probably would never be able to even, take a legal action against these people. We'd have to probably file a complaint and go before some committee, and we're talking about business law or something. It's not even constitutional law. So the constitutional rights that we always have in the past cherished are going to go by the wayside, and this new corporate structure and this new trade policy. And what's dangerous about this whole thing is that they're recategorizing people. If you're against global warming, then you're a terrorist, see? You're against the government. But when they're saying that, the people behind these kinds of ideas are your corporate interests. So, because if you're truly for this country, you're against the monopoly of money creation, see, which gets back to the Fed. And that's what Ron Paul was against, see, was the monopoly of money creation. The Democratic left, they had to attack the real manipulators at the top. They ended up attacking Ron Paul and trying to make him into what people are looking at in the same way, the way they're looking at Trump, see. Like a bigot, a racist, and things like this. But Ron Paul stood for the really high-minded things. One of his main goals was at least an audit of the Fed, and perhaps an ending of that Fed, is what he was striving to do. And they took the Democratic left and got them way off of Ron Paul, so they couldn't come in and help with the end of Paul rallies, in the Fed rallies, or anything that was close to really reforming in a very, very good way this country. That's where the Democratic left has failed this country. The same thing, same job is being done on the Democratic left now by the Hillary, campaign people and the elites that have joined in with her that are against Trump. They're all together, that whether these foundations or whatever, you got to go back. These people have been into drug dealing, the elites, you could say, over the centuries, the opium dealing into China and so forth. And now these cobbles, these drug, lords down in Mexico, the top level, there's been proven that much of that money's been laundered through their banks. And those banks are not in, they're fine maybe, but no one goes to prison that, was a director or a bank officer. So, one of the best books written on this was Dope Incorporated. Go out and get that book and you'll see what this drug business worldwide on an international basis is about. But you've got to try to overcome this delusion and this deluded state and try to come out of that. And this fiefdom, F-I-E-F-F, a financial, intellectual, energy, force, and food, is a way to look at this in a very simple way, but an organized way, and to try to realize what's going on in this country. We've had a very, very raucous and a very chaotic campaign so far, and it's going to be a very tough one to call. They keep attacking Trump, but he pops off at times and opens himself up to some very, very easily manipulated attacks. So he's not thinking, he should keep his mouth shut, and he's got to be more guarded than he has in the past with his statements. He just pops off without thinking, and they'll take the Democratic left with their minions in the press will take and just warp that and twist it any way that they want to make Trump look bad. Trump, people have analyzed some of his speech patterns and so forth, and I won't get into detail about that, but they believe that he is an authentic person trying to do what's right. He doesn't always express himself in the right way, but I believe the legacy that he's trying to establish is a good one. And he's finally realized at 70 years of age, he built all of these skyscrapers, but what are they? He's got to lay down something more meaningful than that. And I believe that's why he's against the real insiders and the establishment. That's why they have all joined closed ranks on him and started attacking him. The all these security advisors and all these corporate heads and all these big corporations are down on him and to destroy his chances. But we're coming to the end of the program tonight, Saturday night, August 13th. I want to thank each and every one of you out there for listening. And I know, I might repeat some of this stuff over and over again, but we've got to try to forgive one another, forgive ourselves and others. And through that forgiveness, we can overcome our slave state. And that slave state is continued by judging and hating and resenting others and not forgiving and loving and being kind to others. And that's what we have to start doing, is forgiveness is the path and is the way. But thank you for listening, and we'll be back next Saturday night. So good night.